He's just audio, huh? I think he might have registered only for audio, but I may have that wrong. Mr. Nagel, can you hear us?
I'm muted. Okay. Good.
Here we go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Nagel. We can see you. We can hear you. Can you hear us and see us?
I can, and thank you so much for permitting me to appear by Zoom. I was on my feet in a trial this week, and I appreciate it very much.
Very good. Mr. Reese is here at counsel table with co-counsel. The court will call the case, appeal number 25-2401, Laura Revolinsky versus Bayer Corporation et al. We'll begin with oral argument on behalf of the appellant. Mr. Nagel, we'll recognize you.
Thank you so much. Bruce Nagel, Nagel Rice. May it please the court. Today, the appeal tests the meaning of Rule 23, which on its face grants exclusive power to the district court to approve fee awards. In this appeal, we raise two issues of first impression in this circuit. Number one, does it violate Rule 23 to delegate to leadership counsel fee allocation? That has not been decided in this circuit, and there are other circuits that have addressed this, but in this circuit, it's not been addressed. The second issue is, should the district court require, as part of the allocation issue, the proponent of the fee award to present an allocation so the court can make a determination as to whether that allocation is fair and reasonable? And the starting point to both of the subsections of my arguments is obviously the plain language of Rule 23. Now, Rule 23H.
Mr. Nagel, I'm sorry for interrupting you. I know it's hard by audio here. I got a question for you before you get too deep into this about the scope of what is in front of us. Is the appeal before us limited to your challenge to the district court's July 25th, 2025 order, in your view, or is it broader than that?
Well, I think it's broader. I think it's broader. I understand that implicates certain filing issues, but I think it's broader because as far as the denial of my application for an allocation of the fees, I think it raises the underlying issue. And the underlying issue is that procedurally, the court made two significant errors. First, it violated Rule 23H4, which specifically delegates who couldn't be asked to provide guidance to the district court. And it's only limited to two identified parties. One, they may refer the issue to a special master or to a magistrate judge. That was not done here. What was done here is that lead counsel provided a lump sum application noting approximately 1,610 hours of Lodestar that was included with absolutely no disclosure of an allocation. Nobody knew that pre-appointment time would not be awarded by them. And remember,
Mr. Nagel?
Yes.
Could you look at the fee application from June 17th of 2024?
Yes, I have it in front of me.
And in particular, page 10 and footnote 2.
Okay. I'm at page 10, and I was at paragraph 42, which disclosed the general lump sum Lodestar.
I'm looking at the memorandum of law that was filed in support, which says only time billed after the formation of the MDL and appointment of leadership council is included here. Why wasn't sufficient notice for you to know that your basic claim was being rejected?
So respectfully, that may be deemed notice. However, the comments to the rule specifically state that the district court is obligated to pay close attention to all applications, and even in the absence of objections, which I'm reading from the note, the comments to the rule, even in the absence of objection, the court bears responsibility as a fiduciary in order to approve the fee.
That's a fiduciary case, to the class. Right? I understand that. But we're talking here about intramural disputes between class counsel. And it seems to me that you didn't raise an objection when it would have been, when it could have been timely addressed by the district court before money was distributed.
And Judge Hamilton, that may be correct. However, the pushback on that argument is as follows. Footnote 4 of the CMO gave the Leadership Council the discretion to allocate and award fees for pre-appointment time.
Sure.
That was a discretionary
But they're telling you in June 17 of 2024, we're not doing that. We're only going with post-appointment, post-MDL transfer time.
I understand that was in the brief, but it was certainly not in the certification that I read closely at the time.
Did you skip the brief?
Respectfully, I don't recall reading the brief line by line. I certainly recall reading the specific.
Well, if you had read it, it would have put everybody on alert to deal with this. If we were to agree with you and your fees should be increased here, where would that money come from?
Well, it obviously would have to come out of the lump sum award that has already been distributed.
Exactly.
I don't know if leadership reserved or not. I put them on notice immediately when I was told that we were not going to get paid.
But you didn't put them on notice when they said to the world, we're not doing time billed before the formation of the MDL.
In the brief, but in my certification, which is part of the record, I specifically certified that I was informed orally by Leadership Council. That is in paragraph 5, which is you'll find at appendix 230. When I asked Leadership Council, what is happening with the fees? Will we all be treated equally? The answer was yes. I was not treated equally.
That's perfectly consistent with what they said here. You're seeking pre-MDL, formation of the MDL time, and nobody got time from before then, right?
What I'm attacking, Judge Hamilton, and I agree that the brief itself put me on constructive notice, whether I read it or not. I agree with that position. But I'm coming to a larger issue, and that is whether I knew it or not, the court had an obligation not to approve a fee award without an allocation. That was never given to the district court. And the very fact that leadership gave a proposal to the district court, in effect, if you read the brief, and that proposal is read as we are cutting out several law firms, many law firms that did pre-appointment work, the district court was obligated not to accept that. The point I'm making in this global appeal is that the district court erred by even allowing the pre-appointment time to be eliminated, because under 23H4, the district court could not do that. And under 23, the district court was the sole power to award or allocate fees.
It sure seems to me that you waited an awfully long time to bring this issue to the district. You're almost saying it's not even waivable. It doesn't matter who objected when. I mean, is that your contention, that no matter the objection, that the allocation authority is just, it's just per se unlawful, regardless of how anybody litigated?
Yes, I am saying that, Judge Scudder, today. I'm saying that as a matter of law, we never even get to my objections, and I concede to Judge Hamilton and the panel, I concede that I did have at least constructive notice in the brief, whether I read it or not, so I'm conceding that point. But the reality is, this is a trend through the country. I've litigated many, many MDLs, both as lead and in other capacities. This is a trend in the country that we believe needs to be stopped, and that is you give the right to allocate fees to leadership, and they generally, all the cases show it, they generally allocate to themselves. This is not a fair way of dealing with Rule 23 allocation powers.
Well, there obviously, you've got a point if there were no opportunity to object. And that's my concern about your raising this so late after the pot of money has already been distributed.
The problem with the objection is that in my discussions with lead counsel, I was led to believe that everybody would get a fair distribution. Nobody ever.
Of course,
told
he's not going to say we're going to be unfair about it. I mean, how does that mollify you in any way? Particularly given the notice, we're not going to be paying pre-MDL money.
Because when I'm asked to sign off on behalf of one of the lead plaintiffs, which I did, and I say, are we going to be treated fairly? Are we going to get a distribution of fees? Nobody said to us from leadership, by the way, let's make it clear, we got a lump sum award, and you and your co-counsel will not be receiving a dime, even though we know you were the firm that filed and argued the Nashville MDL argument. We did it, and this case never settles. No case with approximately 20 litigations around the country ever settles unless an MDL is granted.
I don't know why, Mr. Nagel, given I understand the concern that you're raising, I understand the sensitivity, and I trust your representation that this is a trend and you're worried about it, and it's not good. I don't understand, therefore, why you're not hypersensitive to this throughout the litigation, including affirmatively raising it with the district court, as opposed to relying upon what's said on telephone calls with lead counsel.
And
that's the point that it seems to me that Judge Blakey is making in response to at least what he thought was a belated objection.
And I accept that as a fair comment. However, we have superseding issues other than my own failure potentially to raise it earlier based upon discussions with lead counsel, based upon my trust. I understand that. But in this instance, I believe we need standards to be set so that this type of behavior, this type of delegating to the leadership committee the right to allocate and affect award fees to the various firms, that be ended. And it be ended through an opinion out of this court. Rule 23 does not permit it to be done, and it's being done in this circuit, and it's being done in other circuits around the country. And for me to wait until I actually got the check, maybe that can be questioned. But there's a superseding rule here, and that superseding rule is the underlying allocation was never submitted. Nowhere in this record did the leadership council ever say, on our award of roughly $4 or $5 million, we're going to allocate it this way. The district court never approved an allocation. And if the allocation was submitted, and I was focused on the fact that our two firms and a bunch of other firms ended up getting zero, that would have given me a lot better notice than simply a short entry in a brief where there was no reference at all in the certification. In their certification, specifically paragraph 42, they specifically omitted any reference to allocation, and they specifically omitted any reference at all to the fact that the pre-appointment time would not be awarded. And in this case, I'm sorry, Judge Brennan.
Yeah, Mr. Nagel, thank you very much. Your time has expired. We do appreciate your argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now move to oral argument on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Reese.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Michael Reese. I'm one of the court-appointed co-lead class counsel for the certified settlement class. Again, may it please the Court. The appellant's appeal must be denied for two independent reasons, either of which is dispositive. And the first one is that it is an untimely. Deadlines matter, rules matter, both for efficiency purposes and to prevent chaos in the court. As one of your honors asked, and Mr. Nagel answered, the money here has already been distributed. It was required to be distributed pursuant to the settlement agreement and pursuant to the court's final approval order, and that money was distributed, I believe, in early March, pursuant to the final approval order, which was entered by the court on January 6th of 2025. Mr. Nagel had plenty of opportunity to object to the fee allocation. And it goes back to April of 2022. Case Management Order 4, entered by Judge Blakely, said that generally pre-appointment time would not be considered, and that any attorney seeking compensation had to comply with this order, as well as submit time on a monthly basis. We didn't even address that other aspect of Mr. Nagel's argument that his co-counsel should be allowed to submit time in violation of the order well after the date. Mr. Nagel received that order both through ECF, and as members of the court, we all know that ECF notification is more than sufficient. If you decide not to read an order, shame on you. That's not the fault of the judge issuing the order. It was also sent to them, or at least referenced to Mr. Nagel, or at least one of his partners who had moved for lead counsel, in an email, as well as the other firm that submitted the late time. If he had an issue with that, he should have objected at that time. So this is April of 2022. So we're talking almost 4 years ago. Your Honors, we're completely correct to also focus on the fee application. Judge Blakey issued a preliminary approval order in January of 2024, which said any fee applications were due in June of 2024, and said any objections to those fee applications had to be done by July of 2024, roughly 30 days later. We filed our fee application on time. Mr. Nagel did not file a fee application on time. Instead, he waited over a year, including after the final approval order was issued, as well as the money already being distributed. Well,
some of his time was included in the award, correct?
Correct. So, the
discovery work that he did with respect to his particular client.
That.
So, not a whole lot of dollars, but there was some money there. I guess, speaking more broadly, Mr. Reese, apart from the untimeliness and waiver problems here, I do have some concerns about the extent to which a district judge can simply delegate all this to lead class counsel. Is there any reason, for example, why a judge could not, or maybe should not, order class counsel in one of these fee petitions with an objection from co-counsel somewhere saying, look, lay it out, okay, you've got 1,600 Lodestar hours or whatever it was here, lay out how you're proposing to distribute this among the different law firms, because I'm not just going to bless the gross fee. There's an obligation to referee the disputes among counsel that cannot be resolved by agreement.
Correct. So again, I want to make two points. One's a procedural one, and then answer directly your question. One is, if there was an objection to how that allocation was to be done, the time to have done that would have been within 30 days of the final approval order, because the final approval order, which echoed Case Management Order number 4 from April of 2022, as well as the fee brief that we filed in June of 2024, all stated this is how it's going to be done.
I thought the time to have raised that objection would have been within 30 days of the June 24 petition.
It would have been
to raise an objection and say, we can't even respond to this unless we see the proposed allocation.
I agree with you 100%, Your Honor. And to give even more leeway, even if they didn't object by the by July 2024 deadline, which was set forth in the court's preliminary approval order, they should have also objected to the final approval order. So the deadline for that, I believe, would have been February 6th of 2025. The monies were distributed shortly thereafter because there was no objection.
Well, and what I keep coming back to is a point you made earlier. In April of 2022, with what we're calling Case Management Order number 4?
Correct.
They're on notice then that it's at least presumptively not compensable.
Correct.
So you would think you should be watching all this stuff like a hawk. If you've got time incurred, you should get your vouchers in and what have you. And then when the final approval order comes out, and then to sit on that, I don't know.
I agree with Your Honor, and I think a common theme of their argument is, well, even though we're on constructive notice, we didn't read the orders, we didn't read the briefs, and so we shouldn't be held accountable for that. But that goes back to my opening statement. We're all attorneys. We have an obligation to read court orders, to read pleadings. And I think you're underscoring the point, too. This is something that's so important to you, as Mr. Nagel claims that this is. You should be watching this as like a hawk, and he obviously didn't, because nobody objected in a timely fashion to this.
Well, case, I mean, the one thing about if you're a lawyer doing class action work and you're on the plaintiff's side, case management order number 4 is a pretty important document if you want paid.
In fact, it says if you want to be paid, you agree to these terms. Any attorney seeking compensation in this case agrees to these terms.
The only thing, case management order 4 is not 300 pages.
It is not.
It's a few pages, and the only subject matter that it addresses is lawyer bills, plaintiff's counsel's time.
That is correct, Your Honor. So we think that the appeal should be denied just as untimely, but I'd also point that if you go into the actual standard, it's an abuse of discretion, and there are two decisions from Your Honors relatively recently, the City Key versus National Association of Broadcast Employees, 132F4th 530 from 2025. Judge Hamilton, you were on that case. I think Judge Kirsch was the judge that wrote the opinion, and it's important because it states a district court's decision whether to award attorney's fees is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. We have said time and again that our review of a district court's discretion on this matter is highly deferential, and our review is deferential because the district court possesses superior understanding of litigation, and there exists a desirability of avoiding frequent review of what essentially are factual matters. The need for uniformity is great enough to warrant appellate review of minutia, and the desirability of avoiding a second major litigation strictly over attorney fees is high. So if we go back to case management.
Well, that general point is clearly correct. I take it the objector's point here is that the district court did not, in fact, exercise discretion over this. And the reason he didn't is because the issue was never raised in front of him.
That's correct, Your Honor. But that's a completely independent reason.
Exactly.
Right. But also, and I wanted to point out too, in the Paz case, which Judge Scudder was on from, I believe it's 2019, basically echoes the same abuse of discretion. You have to remember, if you even get to this point, because you could deny this appeal saying it's untimely, but if you reach the issue of whether or not Judge Blakey abused his discretion, he absolutely did not. If you look at our fee brief, it is very thorough regarding and concludes a lot of detail, particularly in the declaration of the co-lead counsel as to all the tremendous work that we did. We appeared in front of Judge Blakey repeatedly. This was a very complicated matter. Judge Blakey received timely monthly records, both expenses as well as time, from all the attorneys that submitted them on time as pursuant to CMO 4. So Judge Blakey was completely on top of more facts than you have in most cases, where you're actually getting detailed by detailed time records broken down to a six minutes, a tenth of an hour. So there's no question that if you even reach that issue, because you can just say this is an untimely appeal, you should have appealed it a long time ago, no later than February. But if you go into the abuse of discretion, there's absolutely no abuse of discretion here.
Thank you, Mr. Reese.
Yeah, and I just wanted to clarify the record for one thing. On the pre-MDL time, again, we don't think that issue has to be addressed. There were a lot of attorneys, including my own firm, that filed the first case, and we filed papers in the MDL as well. And so to the extent Mr. Nagel's arguing, well, MDL time should have been paid, I'll just repeat, no counsel were paid MDL time. And Mr. Nagel's motion, and which he's seeking payment on, was to have this case sent to the District of New Jersey. And as Judge Blakey said, you failed in that effort. And from a class counsel's perspective, it's a good thing because there's a circuit split, not on any issues pertinent here, but on this issue called ascertainability. And the case has gone to the District of New Jersey. It very well might have died. That decision, the Carrera versus Bear decision, and Bear is one of the defendants here, was rejected by this court in the Mullins v. DirecTV case. So that's
there's why not we felt, actually a circuit split on that, however.
Maybe it's not a circuit split anymore. I know the Third Circuit's tried to back away from that a little bit. But unless Your Honors have any more questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. Thank you, Mr. Nagel. The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.
Thank you.